I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Off the Menu with Dara Moskowitz-Grumdahl, the Twin Cities' leading food critic and senior editor of Minneapolis St. Paul magazine. Off the Menu is all about food in the restaurant, at the market, and on your table. Now, here's Dara on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Dara here. I am so here. I didn't think it was going to snow today. I thought we had till tomorrow. Then I just was surprised. Are you surprised too? We're going to have a good show today. Here's the plan. We're going to talk to Molly and Charlie Broder. If you're somebody who eats in the Twin Cities, you know that name. They have the three Italian restaurants in the South Minneapolis, right by Lake Harriet, on the corner of 50th and Penn. So they've been kind of driving the Italian conversation in the Twin Cities for quite a while. I have been curious myself as to how you work with your mom, or how do you work with your kid? I have some tweens that are coming up, and they get sassy, and I'm so happy to put them on the school bus sometimes in the morning. And I love them so much, and I'm happy to see them thrive somewhere else. And then, you know, it's interesting, right? Because you have this fantasy about what's it like to you know, mamma mia, walk in the room, and you got your big platter, and it's all heaped with meatballs. Everybody's happy all the time. That's the fantasy. You kind of want to move into that. And I want to talk to some people who have actually done it, talk about how that is, whether I can move into the fantasy, whether fantasies are better left up in the clouds, all that good stuff. We're also going to talk about what you're cooking, because I am. You know that. You know I'm obsessed. I want to know. It gives me hope. Makes me feel happy. Some people like to look at pictures of kittens on the internet. I like to hear about what you're cooking. So text me 81807. I also, if you have any like Italian cooking questions, you should definitely call us up, because guess what? Molly and Charlie Broder can tell you, like, oh, don't do that to your sauce, or do. I've got a special trick. You can make cannoli in 1 minute. So that would be 651-989-9226. Love to hear you. Also, I've got my enthusiasm on, because guess what I'm doing after this? I'm going down to Lick-A-Boy in St. Louis Park. I'm going to be telling fortunes. What is that all about? Well, I got a deck of cards. I got big plans. So it's going to be a fun day. So Italian food, telling fortunes. What can I do? Fill me with energy. What are you baking? What are you cooking? I bet someone out there is making some bread. I want to hear about that too. 81807. But first, we're going to bring Molly and Charlie Broder into the conversation. All right, so Molly Broder, you started an Italian empire many years ago. Little did you know that your children would grow up and then they would work with you there. I'm so curious about that. And Charlie Broder, you were to the manor born. I imagine they, you know, you were toddling around. Somebody just handed you a breadstick and a meatball, and you were like, this is it. Everything's going to be easy for the rest of my life, right? That's how it went.
Something like that.
All right. So welcome to the show. First of all, let's just get the parameters for people that don't know. Molly, when did you start all of this? You started it with your husband, Tom.
Yeah. Tom and I started it 36 years ago, 1982. And basically we wanted to, we loved food and loved Italian food. We had been to Italy and learned as much as we could about pasta making. And we wanted to.
If I remember correctly, you have a connection to the real bigwig of all, right? Marcella Hazan,
yes.
Who has passed on from this world, but she looks down upon us and blesses us still with her work. I love her cookbook. So you actually knew Marcella.
Yes, I did. Yes, I learned from her.
Amazing.
And we wanted to work together and not have two separate careers. We wanted to raise our family together. We raised them in the neighborhood, so they ended up coming over to the deli all the time. They always knew where mom and dad were.
So your three boys you're talking about.
Yes. And so that's how the family business started. But it was never I always had this idea of how the Europeans do it, where it's generational forever, but didn't really actually want my boys to get into the food business because it's hard. I thought, go do something else.
Yeah, I just set the room on fire once I was in this room and people were asking me like, why aren't there more children of restaurant people, you know, coming up and becoming, I don't know, there's some idea that, you know, you have a hard working mom and then you come up and you're the CEO of the next thing. I was like, a lot of restaurant people I know want their kids to be attorneys or want their kids to, you know.
My brothers and I were often very strongly encouraged to be inspired by other things, you know, and
look how that worked out. Now you're right
there. Of the business. And that's really hard because we were all very well fed.
All right. So, Charlie, yes. Bring me up to speed. What you were all you like born into this, right? What are your first memories of your restaurants?
You know, I have some really fond memories of the restaurants. You know, I think from a working perspective, you know, I can remember sitting at the cashier's station on a stool on a busy Saturday, and I must have been 7, 6, something like that. But you're right, like grabbing a breadstick and always being familiar with it. And then often throughout, you know, as we grew up, we were always working in the business, but, you know, never consciously as this is our future. We were always interested in other things. But, you know, I think when you're surrounded by the beauty of great food and family, I think later on when we started thinking more seriously about our career path, it was a lot more natural and familial to.
Well, the rest of us have to go to work and there are no cookies anywhere or not any good ones. And nobody gives us a mortadella. Like it's a difficult work environment. So
I know. Well, and it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it just evolves sort of naturally and you sort of see, you know, working in a family business is different than, say, punching a clock. So there's more of that sense of responsibility and the cookies and the slices of pizzas help a lot. But it's something that I think, you know, as we grew, we discovered sort of a sense of ownership as well. You know, when your name's on the building and people reference you as you're a Broder, you know, it kind of instills you with a sense of responsibility and pride in what, you know, was created by Molly and Tom. It's something that I find very special and, you know, I'm very grateful for.
I always felt like after Tom died in 2008, 10 years ago, and I feel that was at a very seminal time for the kids. They were just in their early 20s to late teens, and Danny had just graduated from high school 2 weeks before. So I think that it caused more of a commitment to his legacy. I think it was really, all of a sudden, the business really became more important and more of something to commit to.
I think for a lot of us who are on the very outside of all this, you know, your life looks like that's the fantasy, right? Is that you have this great relationship with your mom / have this great relationship with your kids and everybody's just like a spicy meatball, all right? And that's the that's it. But it's because so many other families, you know, everybody's torn. People are working so many hours. They're relocating around the globe. You know, things are so hectic. But why don't you talk to me about the real life and not just the fantasy from where, you know, we all stand through our rose-colored glasses? What's it, you know, what do you have to do to work well as a family?
You raise a great question. I think a lot of people have, you know, family businesses in the United States there's thousands and thousands of them. They're a huge part of GDP, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. Being in a family business is actually really challenging. We, you know, we have the great fortune that we love each other very much. We put that in our relationship between each other as something that's more important than the business. And I think that is something that we, even starting as we were more involved from a professional sense about 10 years ago, was always a commitment that we had. But over the years, I mean, there are moments that strain that very much so, and there's differences of opinions and, you know, people go through evolutions in their life and in their working careers, and I think navigating those waters can be very challenging. And we've had our ups and we've had our downs, but it's one of those things where I think when we look at each other, we know that there's an unconditional love that exists between us that helps guide that. But it doesn't change the fact that there are hard decisions that need to be made in a business. There are hard decisions that need to be made, you know, in terms of working with each other. And it's not always spaghetti meatballs and drinking a lot of wine, even though the wine helps a lot.
As I was mentioning earlier, you know, when you're a family, you know each other's triggers. And very often we have meetings that can really devolve very quickly. And so where we realize that no work is going to get done here because we're just not emotionally ready. But I would say
So you were telling me off air, we were in the green room, and you were saying that you're doing something at St. Thomas. Tell me a little about that.
Yes. So we did discover the Family Business Center at St. Thomas University, and it's been unbelievable.
Family Business Center at St. Thomas. So this isn't one of those things you don't have to go and get your MBA or whatever. This is something else.
Right. No. And they have they work with generational families, and some of them are third and fourth generation. It's been just fascinating. We go to monthly breakfasts where they always have an interesting speaker, and it sort of has inspired us to be better and to learn how to work together in a better way. And it's also taught us a lot of big words like succession planning and business governance and things that, you know, moving into a level that, you know, as a family business, mom and pop, you didn't ever do. We just tried to make the books work, and that was it, you know.
So yeah, because you and your husband started this as just a deli for people to have some good food, and now you've got 130 employees, grown-up sons in the business. You've taken over three corners of your neighborhood.
Yeah, and then there's this pressure to, you know, what worked for one family's income now has to expand into two or three more families' income, not to mention all of our employees, which you feel a great responsibility for, especially the ones who have been with us for many years. So there's all this responsibility to really make the business work. And the kids, I must say, the next generation has really, they've really been pushing me to move into that direction more. It's been really positive.
So I'm just looking now at the website for the Family Business Center at St. Thomas, which I was completely ignorant of. But you were saying, so, you know, you can sign up and go to these breakfasts and meet people. And you were saying that you've met people who have other family businesses. That's who's there.
Thousands of people. I mean, there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people every breakfast. The resource is just an invaluable asset to us at this point, and we're so fortunate to have found it. It has opened doors to, you know, I mean, what we know is great food and service and hospitality and wine, and I'm so grateful for that because I think it's what defines us in a way, you know, in our market. But to be successful for the long term, you know, there's tools that we're now learning through the Family Business Center, like, you know, how do you run a business? You know, not just a restaurant, not just a restaurant, which is really hard, but, you know, we didn't go to business school. And, you know, you think back and you think like, well, yeah, maybe I should have gone to business school, or maybe, and you know, an MBA would be valuable here. Of course it would. But, you know, as Molly said, you know, these things happen naturally. And I think that speaks a lot to a lot of people's lives, you know. Things change, and you end up on different paths. And you know, I feel very fortunate to be on this path because it's really, you know, as much as Molly was saying that it we've driven her. I think we've all been needing to drive ourselves because you know, if we do need to grow or expand or just feel comfortable in what we're doing, those are the tools that we're going to have to learn from. And the Business Center has been an invaluable resource.
Yeah, because the education that I had and that the kids have all been on the culinary side, you know, wine training and culinary schools and things like that. So that does not really train you
transfer
for that
to a
actual
P&L
business
sheet.
Side.
Yeah. Yeah, people are always asking me, you know, why did this high-profile restaurant shut down and why did that happen? And so much of the time the answer is – they had a divorce, that person got cancer, there was a drug addiction in the family, they took all the money out of the business to prop up a son. You know, all kinds of just personal, very, very personal reasons. And people think like, oh, all you need to succeed is the great meatball recipe and, you know, the road. All
right. Yeah, if you want to talk about the restaurant business, I mean, like, I will speak, you know, I sound like my mom now, like, don't do it. it is one of the absolute hardest things to keep maintaining a restaurant. When you look at the plethora of costs and expenses that grow, or refrigeration that breaks, or, you know, utilities and staff and trying to find staff, but trying to pay staff and trying to do that while also making sure that the guest feels like what they're getting is of value and of quality and where that comes from, and doing that 360 days a year. When you start going down the list, you know, to maintain a restaurant like ours, I mean, something that has been generational, that has evolved over many, many, many years. You know, we didn't open last year with a plan to just make money for 5 years or hit this and trend or something like that. We're trying to
franchise and be the Chipotle of, you know, Italian burritos.
We appreciate our integrity in the context of, this is what we love to do. We love to feed people. We love to craft something with quality and integrity. And that gets really hard over a long period of time, and trying to find out the formula and also have that formula evolve with the times. I mean, my decade of sort of heavy operations in the business, I've seen a lot of evolutions in the way that we can operate from the way we were operating. And I think that that's just interesting. And I think it's all good. I think that evolution needs to happen. Change needs to happen. But that's why I think you see a lot of businesses shutter, because at the end of the day, some people just get really tired of it. And I can completely relate to that. So being part of a team with my mom and my brother Thomas, or, you know, that's kind of how I see it, but the three of us as our family, we get to share a lot of that weight. And so, you know, it's something that working together has been part of why we've been able to maintain, because I don't know if you might still be doing this unless we were involved.
Well, let's take we got to take a little break here for commercials. We're going to come back, because I think this is really the core of it. We've gotten into how do you have a difficult conversation when it's your mom, your business partner. 1,000 things are happening around you. I'm very curious about this. And I'm Dara from Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. And we're going to come back and finish this conversation with Marley and Charlie Broder. Dara here. All right. When I'm not writing about Minneapolis, writing about food, writing about people, writing about places for Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine, writing about coffee this month, I had a big coffee feature. That was very interesting reporting. Because we have a special thing here in the Twin Cities. I feel like one of the reasons I chose to live here, you know, all y'all know, I grew up in New York City. I came out here because this is a much better place to live, in my humble opinion, if you're not a billionaire, because you can buy a house, you can make a difference, and the town is knowable. Like, you can actually go to the restaurants, you can actually meet the people, and that's kind of how I'm thinking about this show lately. I'm thinking about knowing the people that are here. For instance, in that coffee story, I really got to know coffee importers, and I got to learn about how our independent Republican heritage through Harold Stassen, you know, really changed the world for the better in terms of getting a better product into here. And this week I'm talking to Molly and Charlie Broder, and we are talking about getting to know that restaurant and the difficulties, because I think having a difficult conversation in your family is maybe the hardest thing in life. Like, that is the thing. And I know that if you guys are working in restaurants, sometimes you got to fire people. Sometimes you got to do a thing to buy a new walk-in cooler. You got to make all kinds of difficult choices. How do you do that hard thing? How do you have those family conversations? Molly, I'm looking right at you, so make you leap into this. Because you have to set the tone. You've got your adult children working for you.
Well, all too often, it's the need to do things, and then there's the cost of doing them. And that often can turn into, I don't know, rather emotional situation.
Interesting discussion.
Charlie's my emotional one.
Yeah.
Two of us could go at it. But, the really interesting thing is that we can really disagree and walk away angry. And then, 15 minutes later, we'll be apologizing to each other. Or we'll be having a family dinner together at one of our homes and it doesn't even come up. We just immediately put all of that away. And I think we do know, like you said, that our relationship is more important than any single decision.
Was that
we
something
make.
You had a train to do? Did that come naturally to you? Is that something you saw your own parents doing? Where did you get that ability to have those, bring up these difficult topics that make people angry? In your family, how did you figure out how to do that?
I know I grew up in a very intact family, 7 kids and really loving parents. And my parents, my mom was a very strong lady, and she and my dad would get into arguments. And I witnessed that. I realized that in marriage and in any long-term relationship, you're going to have conflict. And yet at the same time, I'd see my dad, kind of coming up and patting my mom on the butt and put his arms around her and giving her a kiss. So there was a lot of love there, too. And so I grew up with that. So I don't know what happened with us, but I just thought it was really important that our kids be really good brothers to each other more than anything.
Yeah. You raise a great point. As much as you grew up with that, we grew up with that, too. My parents, you and dad we're always very close, and our childhood and our life also was sort of, fraught with my dad's illness throughout our life. So, he had a heart transplant in the late 90s and a heart attack the day the pasta bar opened. When we start talking about the depths of, the business and family relationship, you really start to uncover in the Broder family and household, a walk-in cooler doesn't mean anything when it comes to trying to figure out how to bring, dinner to dad in the hospital or to, navigate how we live together, now today. I think there is that understanding that I think that we all have, my brother Tom and, our younger brother Danny and my mom that, we've been through a lot personally, but and I think it's been getting harder and harder as we've been trying to grow the business and it's become a bigger thing with Terzo involved now. There have been more challenging conversations, but at the end of the day, there's sort of I think waters we've waded through that are more challenging, and there may be disagreements, but I think we all know that those are at the end of the day fairly trivial to the bigger picture, and I'm very grateful for that. I know that that's not common for everybody in this world to be coming from a family like that or to have that perspective. So I value that very much, and I try and model that for my now family and my kids that I have.
Because you have 2 little ones now.
2 little ones.
Congratulations.
The next generation. I'm trying to work myself out of a job. I'm still young, and I'm realizing that to get out, you got to have kids. So. just kidding. But it's one of those things where I think, being in this having this experience of working in a family business and working with my family, but also the history of my family is really formulating my approach to my family and how I want to be presenting, my parenting, but also being present too. I mean, the thing about trying to build the company is also trying to build the balance of how do I find time for my family that restaurants could consume every second of every day?
Sure.
And that's hard to, how are you at home at night? How do you figure that out? So growth and expansion is part of that, and hiring the right people and training them and being present for those people to do it. So that's, I think, what brings up a lot of those challenges. And, when you ask about how do you bring up topics, I think you're confronted with topics more than things are brought up. You're dealing with crisis more than anything. When the heater goes out and it's 20 below, I mean, you got to jump on it. And often that costs thousands of dollars. But, it's like and I think over the last few years we've been getting better at communicating. And, there have been some strong conversations.
We are really strong-willed people.
Yeah. And I think you have to be. You know, I really appreciate you guys being so open with this. It's, you know, when I think of Broders, I think of it as like the best mortadella anyone's ever had. And anytime I need fresh pasta, I'm definitely going to the Cucina. And it's also, you know, where I go and when I haven't managed to feed myself dinner and it's 8 o'clock at night. You know, so I've got all, you know, I think of. And if anybody hasn't had the porchetta from the little terzo window, it's just unbelievable. You have do this polenta with porchetta and a soft egg that is, I mean, it's just.
That's on the menu at Terzo every day. So.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. People, if you haven't had that, you should get in there. But it's as interesting to me where I am in my career right now is how do we, as a community, as a place, like how do we have these businesses continue to exist and who's in these businesses? How do we know what's going on there? I mean, it's one thing to say it's the best fresh pasta in town. That's true. You know, but it's another to have that layer of understanding to be like, oh, it's not just the best fresh pasta in town. It's this family that is part of our community that is kind of modeling a good business on this corner. I'm really grateful to you guys for being so open and willing to talk about this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I find that you raised a great point, which is talking about community. And we've had a sense of, you know, obligation to our community. You know, I mean, our three restaurants, Broder's Cucina Italiana, which we refer to as the deli, Broder's Pasta Bar, the, you know, sit-down, full-service pasta-focused restaurant, and Terzo, a little bit more fine dining and wine-focused, are all in different neighborhoods. So we, right on the same intersection is where Lyndhurst, Armitage, and Fulton come together. And throughout my childhood of playing in Lyndhurst Park or, you know, running down to Fulton and skateboarding around the neighborhood, you know, my dad was on the Fulton board. You know, we've had a sense of community and a sense of participating in that community that when you feed that community is it brings it to another level, I feel like. I always want to be there for the families around us and for the whole city. But, you know, when you're looking at the same people every day coming in for lunch or sitting at the pasta bar every Friday night or, you know, coming in and just feeling like that's their place, it changes the way that you do that. And I think that's why we do what we do. We're givers. We want to nourish our guests and our community. And that's something that has driven us and makes running the business, I think, easier when you're doing it not for yourself, but for those around us.
Well, we live in the community that we serve. I mean, it's really important to be, I mean, I just love, it's not a lot of people don't, but I just love that we live in the community we serve. So we know the people around us and we know the city of Minneapolis. And I'm glad that, you know, my personal tax dollars, my home tax dollars help feed the city, you know, and I'm glad that it's all related, the community.
It is. And that's what makes, you know, that's one of the things that makes Minneapolis special. I don't understand people who, you know, leave their lives or they're just constantly in these kind of corporate construct restaurants. It's like, why don't you want to know where you are? Don't you want to have a special thing in a special place that connects you to their actual moments and place and time? Isn't that what you want? And then Broder's a perfect example of that with a, you know, and there are countless family restaurants around town. I mean, if you look at just your Italian restaurants around town, you certainly have, Ricky Giambruno, who just opened Hyacinth in St. Paul. And then you have, the DiGidio's, who have been running restaurant in St. Paul since Prohibition ended. And, you know, so this is where we are, and this is what's real here.
Yeah, you know, you raise a great point, and it's something that I've been thinking about recently. When I think about where I go to, you know, find my food or to eat somewhere or whatever, I'm always focused on small, independent, family-run, not just family-run, but independently-run restaurants. Like Ricky, I love Ricky. You know, Hyacinth, if you haven't been, you need to go.
Yeah, I nominated that as my dish of the year last year. It's a new little place. It's so tiny. It's right on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. It's sweet.
He worked at Terzo for like a year and a half. I mean, like, he's so sweet. And like, but it's one of these things where more and more, I think, and I don't know if the general population knows it, but we will be losing that. And it's because of a lot of challenges around generational succession, family business and operation, but even the restaurant industry overall is becoming harder and harder to have consistent and successful operation when you start thinking about all the outside influence that kind of is putting pressure on small independent family restaurants.
And there's a certain flattening that the internet has created. I think, you hop on the internet and then everything's got its Yelp reviews and OpenTable kind of showcases everything. So in the exact same way, you kind of can't tell what's real and what's a gimmick or quick money grab.
But on the other hand, we've never had a more vibrant food community. I mean, this city is exploding with really fabulous small independents, and I just hope that it continues and that we all thrive.
I would agree with that. You know, Molly raises a great point. The city is just brimming right now, and I'm so excited for all of the places that are opening and have opened and are continuing and trying to support them. I think you raise a great point, and yeah, it takes some intent to support that and to make sure that it continues.
Oh, we got a question. Has anyone in your family, have any of the three sons, have any of them not gone into the family business? And is that difficult?
Oh, that's a great question.
I have one son who is a very accomplished chef who studied in Italy, who has taken some time off right now. He went back to school. Went to the U to study agriculture, and he's right now doing carpentry. And he's kind of finding his way, my youngest. And he's kind of entrepreneurial, too. And it's going to be interesting to see where he lands. But he definitely has an interest in our business and is trying to figure out a way for all of that to coalesce.
Danny,
and I think it's possible that he won't. But it's also possible that he will get involved with us. And so we'll see.
It's an active situation.
It is
a good one.
Situation.
Thank you, Texter, for saying
but is it,
that.
But it is not, it's not mandatory that you that
no,
you
be far
involved.
From it. I mean, like, you know, that's something like you don't want to ever obligate, you know, the – it's a fairly heavy thing when you start thinking about it. You know, your mom, your brothers, you're trying to, like, you know, I think everybody wants to you know, make their family happy and proud. And I think we've always been, you know, upfront with Danny, like, if you don't want to do this, don't, you know, it's not, you know, we both, you know, I know Tom and I have looked at each other like, why are we doing this?
And picture being the youngest. And so then you're working for your next oldest brother, then your next oldest brother and your mother. I mean, that's pretty
daunting.
But,
Danny's still, you know, Danny's involved. Danny knows cooking. He's extremely talented. Yeah. You know, he's in the know, you know, but like, you know, so he's part of the family. You know, you can't get out. No matter how hard you want to, you just can't get out.
And you literally, you have the cannoli. So, you know, just at all times, you just kind of, you know, prop a box up over one and then
exactly.
He's back in. All right. Well, this has just really been delightful. I can't thank you enough. Your publicist sent me your Valentine's Day menu, too, which I should mention. Everybody, make some Valentine's reservations. And you can make them at Terzo.
Terzo Valentine's Day menu is going to be great. It's a multi-course prefix menu. I strongly recommend it. It's up on the website. Check it out, terzompls.com. And drop in anytime.
Yeah, because now you guys, I think now anybody listening to this show has an intimate sense of what really goes on. And that, I can't thank you guys enough for being so open and just kind of letting us understand. I think that, like I said, the farther I get into being a restaurant critic, the more I find that this really is, as much as it's about the most delicious mortadella in the world, it's about the people. And you guys are our people. And thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Sarah. Thank you for having us.
All right. We come back. We're going to go through recipes. We're going to get to all of the things that you are cooking. I got a text line that's filled up. Are you making a little sugo? I got someone out there. We'll talk about that when we come back. Dara here. Kids and I are reading Lemony Snicket and the Family Sapphires of the Quagmire triplets are a big plot point. I think of gems right now, and I think of sapphires. Oh, that's one of the things we do in the morning. We read a few pages of Lemony Snicket, and we have a warm cocoa, or I have my coffee, and kind of get the day started off on that foot, because it's just a nice way to do things when it's cold, don't you think? Other nice things to do when it's cold? Well, one, come see me at Lickaboy. I'm going to be down there. The one that's right by the Home Depot in St. Louis Park. I'm going to be there from 1 to 3, kind of tasting, sampling wines. And I've got this thing. I've got my new gimmick that I'm trying out today. I've got this fancy deck of cards that have all these foods on them. And I'm going to try to get everybody to, like, figure out what their next wine is that's going to make them happy. So maybe there's a tall, dark stranger that's a Merlot in your life. Something like that. So come on down from 1 to 3. That's what I'm doing next. That's a good way to spend an afternoon. Another good way to spend an afternoon is with chili. Make some chili. Make a big pot of chili. Get the house all warm. That's a good thing to do. All right. So I have the best in the world. Best ever. Best everything. Chili's up at WCCORadio.com right now. And I call them celebrity chilies, but that's really stretching the concept of celebrity, because my number five, my kind of one that I love so much, is the Salem Lutheran Church Minnesota State Fair chili. So you've been to the State Fair, right? You've had the chili at the Salem Lutheran Church Pavilion, haven't you? Maybe, perhaps. You can imagine it, any event. And now you can make it for yourself. Because we've got the recipe. They gave it to Savor Magazine. Now we have it. It is up on the website. It's just mild. It's a lovely, mild, classic chili, toddler-friendly chili. The chili that says, I'm not leaving this house. It's too cold for me. It's a good one. All right, but then if you're a little more fancy, perhaps you like the Barefoot Contessa's chicken chili. So we are continuing Beanuary, of course. You knew I was going to do this all month. I'm all about the health-giving properties of legumes and beans. So you got your chili full of beans. You knew that. All right, so Barefoot Contessa is the one. I bring that up now because it doesn't have any beans in it, but you need to put some beans in it because that's all what I'm about. You can do some chickpeas, I think. Just dump a can of chickpeas in there. There. More healthful. I've got Bobby Flay's vegetarian mushroom chili. The more mushrooms you can shove into a vegetarian chicken chili, the happier I am. I got a question already, like, how can I make this gluten-free? It just has a little bit of wheat flour in it, and it's just there to thicken it. So just substitute anything. Substitute buckwheat. Substitute quinoa. It's just there to make sure that the broth is not too brothy. Make it a little thick. Another celebrity, Andrew Zimmern's pork and black bean chili. I got some local black beans the other day from the farmer's market counter in one of our wonderful skyscrapers downtown. That was fun. So, yeah, make local black bean chili. And then this is the one that I can't get enough of. It's Grant Ackett's. He's a famous Chicago chef, but this is not the chefy one. This is his mom's ground beef chili, and this is now my house chili. This is the one that my kids make, that we love. We always have a quart of it frozen. Or if we don't, that's a crisis. But we try to have as much of it around as possible because it's delicious. So I've got this chili. That is up there. So they're all up at the WCCO Radio website. All the recipes are up. You can read them. All right. And so now this is part of the show where I answer your questions. I have got that's not the internet. It's not letting me do things. Leave this page. All right. There we go. So I've got a question. Somebody is baking their Irish soda bread. Oh, I like that. That's a good way, use of the weekend. Make your house smell really great. I've got a question about the best bagels in the city. Well, what are the best bagels in the city? I would say that they're probably either St. Paul Bagelry, which I love very much, or Rise. Rise Bagelry is just a great, great place. It's in downtown Minneapolis. And it's just, they make really, really very soft and doughy. All right, I got somebody who's using up my apples from my apple tree. Apple slices with cinnamon and a little brown sugar. And the house smells so delicious. I bet it does. Good for you, hanging on to your apples till mid-January. I got somebody who's making no-knead oatmeal bread. And it's so easy and good. It has honey and molasses. You just have to chill the dough. That's very cool. And somebody's making a sugo Betty sauce. Well, that is a good way to use a cold day. All right, I'm almost out of here. I hope you're going to come see me at Liquor Boy in St. Louis Park, because that's where I'm going. I'm going to be there at 1. But next week, it is going to be the day before the Super Bowl. So maybe we'll do some guacamole recipes. Maybe we just do the things that football players eat, like giant steaks. But whatever we do, do not leave your water bottle in the car today. I care about you not having explosions. And may your heart and toes stay warm while your temper and your cold, frosty beverages stay cool. And I will meet you here next week on Off the Menu.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.